As long as it's not double dutch.
We need to be a master of double dutch.
Yeah.
I
loved it. I could just, I had the whole thing down.
If I tried it now, first of all, I'd be out of breath in my two jams.
In the chair report, I'm just going to bring your attention to a few of the information items. I'll go ahead and do that now, so that will cut us short not having to deal with those a little bit later. The CIT program was moved from University College to Ogden College. If you'll recall, that is a that program came through the University Curriculum Committee previously, and was they had proposed to they were trying to get rid of that program. Suspend, thank you, there's the word. It's, you know, it's late in finals week. So they had proposed to suspend that program, and the provost rejected the suspension, number of students in the program. So the program has now been moved to Ogden College. It is going to be housed within the AMS department in Ogden, and so what is posted online for you as an informational item is a memo about that transfer with the various deans and so forth and so on signing off on that. Also, I just wanted to let you know for informational purposes that I did have a conversation with Greg Arbuckle, who is the chair of AMS, because I wanted to make sure that AMS was absolutely aware of this transfer before it happened, and that the faculty were made aware of the transfer, and that all the funding and all the faculty were able to handle this program. And that was the case. So this is one of those changes that, yes, it did incorporate the faculty ahead of time prior to the decision being made. So that is some informational, an informational item for you guys. The university, so the University Curriculum Committee, what they did is they, the CIT program folks withdrew that suspension, and then they have now moved the program. So that takes care of that. So that is that item. The second item of information item, that will come up when we deal with the handbook information a little bit later on. Two memos that are in information items, and we can talk about these more at length a little bit later if you would like to. There's President Ransdell's response to the prayer policy that was put forward that came through faculty welfare, and then with after some discussion in Senate was passed through Senate and sent on. The Administrative Council has decided not to implement the prayer policy at this time. You can read that response. I know that there has been some response from faculty about that already, and so I think that we will probably be having more discussion in Senate about that issue. There's President Ransdell's response to the resolution on South Campus that was passed this last time through Senate, so you can read about that, some more information. And then there's a couple of lists that are there. The Provost Advisory Committees, those are the final lists that were selected from SEC this last go-round, and I know that the Provost is still selecting some members from the extended campus locations, and then potentially some staff members and other folks who may be on some of those committees. So those are the final kind of faculty lists, main campus faculty lists that we had for that. The last one is the standing committees, the draft list for the next academic year and the next term of Senate. Please take note that there are some colleges who do not have representatives listed for some of those committees. Now, I know that this is the responsibility of some of the incoming senators, as well as those of you who may be departmental senators who are staying through next year, but we need to make sure that we have college representation on each one of these committees. There are some that do not have that. There are several blanks in this list. So please take a look at that. Encourage your fellow senators who are incoming, or maybe others who may be already here and are staying through the next term, to fill in those spots so that we make sure we can start off next academic year with full standing committees and get working as soon as possible at the beginning of the term. That is what I have for you. Is the chair report, vice chair, Jennifer?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
Our secretary, Heidi?
The sign-in sheet is being passed around. Please cross out your name. If you are an existing senator, if you are a sub, please write your name to the right of the person you are subbing for. If you're over on the side as a guest, please make sure that you get the sheet and sign in. Sometimes it does not make it all the way over there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Molly Cospel. Is Molly here? Or a representative? Okay. AAU President, AAUP President Eric Reed. Is he here?
Okay.
Thank you. That will be within the Regent report, which is next. Absolutely. So the Advisory Board, Faculty Regent Patty Mitch.
Okay. This is really sort of a combination AAUP report because the major thing I wanted to share with you is that I went as the representative of WKU's AAUP chapter to the state AAUP meeting on May 3rd, and I'm very, very glad I did. We met in Lexington at Transylvania University, and there were representatives from the AAUP chapters around the state, and lots of them. So learned a lot. I learned a lot, and I'm actually going to present what I learned. One of the speakers was the was one of the national board representatives who chairs the Red Book Committee. The Red Book is the big book of everything you needed to know about faculty rights and responsibilities. And you can get lots of it up on the AAUP website. But the guy's just fantastic, and I have his PowerPoint that he was gracious enough to share with me. So AAUP will meet this fall, and we'll do that as a workshop, and I think it'll be a really great experience for all of us. But the major takeaway that I want to share with you today very briefly is the theme of his talk and the theme that the AAUP leaders talked about in a panel discussion on which I appeared was basically this. Faculty governance means action, not just reaction. And we all agreed that we're all kind of bad about this. And this is maybe not the best time of year to give the big action speech because obviously we've all got way too much to do and I'm on that list. But we all found that we tend to be best at faculty governance when there's something happening that we really don't like and then everybody swings into gear and pulls together. But again, if you don't already have strong functioning committees and a strong functioning Senate, then it's far more difficult to get everybody into shape. So the takeaway is that we need to stay ready for action, and we need to continue to work constantly to keep the committee strong, keep the Senate strong, and to make sure that faculty governance, not just shared governance between faculty and administration, but faculty governance is always at the forefront. So let's try to first avoid the crisis moments, which they always come, but if faculty voices remain constant and remain relevant, then you hopefully are able to head off some of those crisis points. Secondly, I want to urge everybody as we finish up the year and recharge our batteries that we work to make things better by doing what we always do, which is identifying problems and working to solve them. And finally, remembering that we are the guardians of faculty rights and responsibilities and the academic mission. And again, this is an active role. This is not a passive role, and this is an everybody role. We represent our colleagues, but all of us as faculty are engaged in this, and we need to be engaged in this constantly. And if we see a violation of those rights, we call it out. We empower our students to do the same. And I'm really pleased with the continuance of our good relationships with our colleagues in the Student Government Association. So as I look forward to weekend of graduation, and this summer there are two board meetings. There is, I'll send this out an email, but there's a budget meeting at the end of June and the committee meetings, and then we have a two-day board retreat at the end of July. So I'll be spending a lot of time representing you and your concerns to the Board of Regents, but as I do that, I remain mindful, and I ask that you remain mindful as well, that rights are never self-executing. We can know what they are, and we can be really sure that everybody else knows what they are, but when they aren't, then it's our responsibility to point that out and to work to rectify that. So it's essential to academic freedom, to academic integrity, and direct democracy, in which I think we all believe, and your presence here means you participate in that, but it means that we all need to be in it together. And again, these rights just don't execute themselves. I look very forward to representing you this summer at the Board of Regents meetings. I hope you have a great summer, that you recharge your batteries, and you come back ready for a fall where we spring into action and try to avoid reaction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patty, and thank you so much for all of your hard work on all of our behalves. Moving on to our second advisory report, our provost, Gordon Emsley.
Good afternoon. 5.5 recommendations, all approved, 0401 Graduate Council, 01A Graduate Council Policies, 02 UCC. The third recommendation, which was in the regional campus travel policy, that recommendation was accepted to move that forward. It was taken to AC this Monday and is being generalized to include not just faculty, but faculty and staff. It will be moved into a 4-point-something-something policy, so that's one I'm going to have to bring back in the fall for final concurrence, whatever that is. But right now we're generalizing it to include non-faculty employees traveling to and from regional campuses as well. 4 Colonnade courses approved, and there was one that somehow got lost from last December, an amended UCC report with one course on it, and that was approved as well. As Morgan mentioned, the committees are in fact formed. We have the regional campus reps, we have other reps. The Budget Council will meet on Monday, immediately after commencement, to discuss a variety of issues going forward. Again, the sort of crisis mode of the previous year's budget now over, we're looking for longer term planning as we gear up for the staffing plan for next year. And one of the things we're going to be looking at is spending, institutional spending by IPEDS category. There are about 10 or 12 or so different categories. Instruction is one. And we're looking at our spending relative to benchmarks in each of these categories. The Space Committee, again, is now complete. They've added 3 regional campus reps and also some folks from facilities management and planning, design, and construction and IT. Meeting has not yet been set up yet. We're trying to set that up for the next couple of weeks or so. Most of the summer we'll be dealing with how will the committee actually operate, leading to our consideration of space requests in the fall. Summer enrollment is pretty much steady. Noticeably up in freshmen taking summer courses, which is quite remarkable considering that the number of actual freshmen we had in the fall was down somewhat compared to the previous year. So summer school has been very successful. I encourage you all to participate. And fall enrollment is, we're still monitoring that. It's pretty steady as well. I think we were like +4 or something in new freshman apps last time I looked, but that's something that evolves quite rapidly over the summer. I am currently part of a work group which reports to a steering council. The steering council is composed of CP members and the university president's council to develop and reconsider the state funding model. You've heard President Ramsdell talk about this, that we are second to last in terms of state appropriation per FTE student. And there's been some discussion about reinventing or restructuring the funding model for the higher ed formula. And it generally is perceived we do very well if that came out. So we're looking at kind of a combination performance-based funding and historical model. And that will be happening over the summer as well. And we'll keep you updated faculty always, if necessary, as to how that's progressing. It's actually moving quite quickly. The search for this dean of the College of Health and Human Services will be reinitiated within the next month or so. We're going to use a search firm this time, so it takes a little while. We have to get a personnel services contract approved through Frankfurt, but that search committee has been formed and will meet again over the summer, leading to a search throughout the fall and hopefully an appointment in spring of 2015. After somewhat of a hiatus, largely due to various changes at CP and so forth, academic program review is back at a vengeance. In the next week or two, we'll be reviewing the reviews that many of you have conducted on academic programs within your departments and colleges. Those of you who may remember this in the past, used to be like, you know, how many graduates did you have? And that was a very important number. And if it was below a certain number, there was some concern expressed at the state level. That's gone. Pretty much now what we do is our own internal six-year review, and we send a summary sheet two and a half pages long to CPE for their review. And so the first round of that will happen in the next couple of weeks or so. They're due at CPE by the end of June. And let me echo the Faculty Regents' comments. Look forward to seeing you all at commencements. There's four of them this weekend, one tomorrow and three on Saturday. We had the graduand at Glasgow last Thursday. And if you still need more, there is the Owensboro and Etown commencements will happen at exactly the same time. I'm going to Elizabethtown, and Dennis George is going to Owensboro. That's on Monday evening. And keep those batteries charged. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Emsley. Is there any word on the Gatton Academy hire, or can you say?
I would prefer not to say anything at this time, okay. But we're getting there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Expect a Gatton Academy announcement fairly soon.
All right. Thanks very much. SGA incoming president, Kiana Boca, could not be here today, and so this is our incoming president for next term. We appreciate her being here. This is Nikki C.
Yes. Good afternoon. We actually had our SGA banquet last Tuesday where I was sworn in, so just kind of getting everything started and transitioning here. So I just wanted to take a second to introduce myself to you all and also let you know what's going on in the SGA land. And just about myself, I'm a double major in ag business and mass communication with a minor in political science. And as far as what we're doing in SGA, we have most of our executive board picked out, but we are looking for a PR director and five justices. So if you all have any students you have in mind that seems like that could be a great fit for them, we are looking for applicants. So definitely would love to have you guys send them our way. And we are going to have an SGA retreat next week, in which we will kind of get our concrete ideas and goals for the year set out. So we'll have more information on what SGA aims to do next year after that. And so, as always, we're open to any ideas or suggestions you all might have from your side if you see something that we can do to serve students better, or just something that we can do or our Senate can interact with the Senate as it needs to be and help have a strong both faculty and student governments on campus. So that's all I have. I look forward to working with you all over this next year, and have a great summer.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Moving on to our standing committee reports and recommendations, starting with Graduate Council.
Tammy Van Dyke, and I'm here on behalf of Beth Plummer. And so I'd like to submit for approval the April report from the Graduate Council.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any discussion on this report? Okay, hearing no discussion. Graduate faculty only for the vote, please. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. Moving on to our UCC committee report.
I move approval of the items from the April 24th UCC.
Is there any discussion on the UCC report items? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of approval of the UCC report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and then we have some policy items as well.
Move approval of the seven policy items from the April 24th UCC meeting.
Is there any discussion on these policy items? All right, hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. And moving on to our academic quality report.
I move approval of the April 28th academic quality report.
Okay. Any discussion over this academic quality report? Yes. You go ahead and get the microphone. Make sure you announce names and before you start. Names and microphone.
Hello. Okay. Lauren McLean from Sociology. I really like the idea of changing some of these measures, and so I do appreciate that. I did have a concern, though, with the recommended change to question number 5. The N on my progress in learning almost makes it sound like a progress report, like we're supposed to give progress reports. I don't know if that was probably was not the intent, but that's just the way it sounded to me when I read it. So I wondered if we could just end it after feedback instead of having that little last part.
Okay, so the item, I brought it up there, you probably can't see it, but it says, the current question is, my instructor provides helpful feedback. The recommended revised question, number 5, says, my instructor provides timely and constructive feedback on my progress in learning. And so what you're saying is to end after feedback.
This is Aaron Wickman. I have a comment, actually, on that same item for a different reason. It's what, in my field, we call a double-barreled question, where it asks two things. It says, my instructor provides timely and constructive feedback. So often, ideally, those things do go together. They don't necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a source of error in the measurement. It's fine with me if you want to leave that. I know that generally halo effects, instructor enthusiasm, for instance, will cause people to respond positively on all of these items. It may not matter that much. However, if this is something the body's concerned about, it may be worth addressing.
Thank you very much. For the discussion, comments on the proposed changes or proposed comments? Okay. Is there a motion out of any of those comments to alter these items? Would you like to do that, or
I would.
Wickman again. I'd move to approve the first 4 items and ask for the 5th item to be redrafted and have us take another look at it.
Okay. Okay, so we have a motion to alter this a little bit to approve within the academic quality report to approve the 1 through 4 items and then to send the 5th item back to academic quality for revision. So we have a motion and a second on that. Any further discussion on that?
Really quickly, Aaron. What I'm hoping to do is try and get this resolved today, if we can, because there is a possible chance that we might get these enacted in the fall, if we can get it through Senate today. So if you want to help me, talk me through, do you think that we should just split this into 2 questions entirely and add an additional one?
No, I don't think any of us want to do that more, increase the reporting burden. How about, how would people feel about constructive feedback?
And just end with constructive feedback.
To dodge the question a little bit, because people can kind of smush in their heads constructive in together with timely.
Right.
And I've got to admit, I have a little bit of a knee-jerk response to seeing a question that asks about 2 things. So,
sure.
Again, it's not a huge issue. I'd be very happy with constructive as opposed to timely and constructive.
Okay.
I'd be willing to accept that as a friendly amendment if we can do that.
Aaron, would you like to amend your motion then, please?
Yeah, then if I could amend my motion to approve, to say I'd like to approve all of these with number 5 being amended to read, my instructor provides constructive feedback, period.
Margaret?
Okay, yes.
Just a point of order. There's already a motion on the floor to approve all 5 changes, so the amendment could just be to edit the 5th one, vote on that amendment, then we vote
so we're
to
going
approve.
Back to that. So do we need to, the other motion just dies then?
No, what you do is you have the amendment to change number 5 to my instructor provides constructive feedback. that's the amendment that's voted upon. Then we vote on the amended motion, which to approve all four and the amended fifth one.
Okay. So two then. Okay. So Aaron, I guess.
So our first vote will be to approve them.
And with the amendment of number five.
With the amendment of number five. So I'd move that we approve these with the suggested amendment to number five. And we have a second if at this point that's necessary.
Second.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on that?
McLean.
Yes.
I don't know
if
it's on there. Can you just restate the amendment?
Yeah, so the change in number five will say my instructor provides constructive feedback, period.
Okay. Is there any further discussion or question about that? So this is for approval of all five items. The fifth item revised to read, my instructor provides constructive feedback. I'm sorry.
First vote is the amendment.
First vote is just the amendment. Sorry. Okay, so the first vote is just for the amendment of item number five to read, my instructor provides constructive feedback, period. Sorry, points of order were never my strong point. Any other discussion on that? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment of item number five for my instructor provides constructive feedback, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. So then the second one would be for the approval then. This is the academic quality report with the approval of all of the items with that amended number five that we have just approved. So I don't think we need a second on that, as that is a part of the report. So any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. And Allison, if you could send me the update of that, please. Thank you. Moving on to our faculty welfare and professional responsibility report.
I move to submit the April 28th faculty welfare report for approval.
Okay. So we have the faculty welfare report. Any discussion over this report? Yes.
I just wanted to confirm that this committee has not been consulted on the issue of promotion of instructors to different ranks.
You all did not consider the promotion of instructor to different ranks. You were not consulted as far as the handbook item. Is that?
It was forwarded to us just as an information item, but not.
Because I noticed in your report you said you'd heard rumors that it was in the works, but you were going to search for information about it, so.
Right, I think it was, Max sent it to us after we had our meeting. And so we talked about it in our meeting briefly and had talked about it before that. And that's why we mentioned the rumors of, and then we actually got a document. We didn't know it had been in the works, I guess, for a couple of years at least.
But that's the only time this committee's discussed it?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, Aaron.
Aaron Wickman here. I believe at this point in the agenda we're discussing only the resolution. And thank you for your point of clarification, Robert. Is that right, that at this point we're going to be discussing the resolution pertaining to instructors?
Is the report, which includes the resolution, correct? Because I know we've done this a couple different ways.
Yeah, since the resolution is listed separately in the agenda, you typically vote on it separately.
Okay, we've done this a couple of ways. So we will vote on the report first, and then we will move to the resolution. So is there any further discussion on the report? Okay, all those in favor of approval of the faculty welfare report, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. So moving on to the resolution. Tucker?
I move to submit the resolution pertaining to instructors for approval.
Okay, so discussion on the resolution item. Aaron?
Is there a second?
Oh, well, do we need it? I don't think we do because it's coming out of committee.
Second.
Wickman here. You know, the university is an elite institution. Our job is to generate, to create, and disseminate knowledge, and that requires world-class faculty. And there are some people who believe that you can run an institution with instructors. Discussing tenure for instructors, as much as I want to give, we have a fantastic instructor in my department that I really would like to give tenure to. I'm sure Margaret very much deserves tenure. As much as I want to do that, discussing tenure for instructors enshrines instructors as an acceptable way to run a university. We have pedagogical faculty lines. But to provide tenure for somebody like myself, you know, I taught college German for 2 years with a BA degree. I'm well qualified for it. But I shouldn't. I mean, it's different than being a tenure-track faculty member. So as much as I personally would like to extend tenure to some of the instructors that I'm familiar with, for instance, one in psychological sciences department resigned a faculty position to move here so she could be with her husband. On average, the criteria for hiring instructors are very, very different from the criteria for hiring faculty members. And if we want to have excellence in what we do, we have to be able to find from around the world the leading people in their fields. And hiring somebody to cover classes that then is brokered into tenure is a move in the direction of a community college, an institutional school, industrial school. It's if we want excellence, we have to find a better way to remunerate and to honor our instructors that does not render acceptable the current, some people's interest in running a university using instructors.
Other discussion on this resolution?
This is Mark Reeves. I think another issue we need to take into account is that this can quickly become a five and out policy where we end up with instructors getting up to where they might be promoted or, you know, quote, tenured, and then immediately there's a mass dismissal of instructors and new instructors are brought in. So I think that gets into the issue that that Professor Wickman brought up. But I think that's something we need to keep in mind, that it might do the opposite of what we intend it to do.
Any other discussion?
I would just say that the intent of this resolution, I guess it grew from the LAS move and the feeling of main campus faculty that then felt, they phrased it as second class. And so we were trying to find a way that addressed the promotion issue. We didn't want instructors that had proven themselves to feel stuck with no upward mobility. So that was the rank side of it. And it just so happened that document had been in the works for a couple of years and just happened to come to light this semester. The other half of that is how do we give them some long-term security. We looked at the options of offering multi-year appointments, which when we started to look at policy 1.2000 seemed kind of irrelevant simply because the continuance policy stated that they are automatically continued unless otherwise notified, right? So the fact that instructors aren't notified, I mean, how you phrased it, no news is good news, right? But still, that doesn't lock them in. That still leaves the option for them to be terminated at any moment or within a year. So we were just hoping to find some other way to give instructors that had proven themselves a valuable member of our university community, some way to, you know, feel locked in. You know, I know journalism has a faculty member that has been here many years and
just got inducted into 25 years.
Okay, 25 years, and still the option exists that person could be terminated with at any year. So how do we make these people not just, how do we make them feel locked in and valued without giving them multi-year appointments? And seemed like tenure was a good way to do that. We realize, I think faculty welfare, everyone on faculty welfare realizes that was a much, much bigger discussion than we were prepared to take on at the end of the semester here. So with a lot of implications.
I can't hear.
Make sure you microphone and name, please. Yeah, still a microphone and name.
Can you hear? I'm Sumangi, and I just had a question. Can we go every 3-year renewal instead of every 1 year? That's halfway.
I think that was the multi-year appointments, and I'm not, and that option exists, I believe. I'm just not sure how we can, if it's possible to mandate. I know it's left up to the departments whether or not they give 1-year renewables or a 3-year multi-year appointment.
Sorry, go ahead. Please.
I think we did review that, and the problem with that was that after the 3 years, you had to call a different search, so it was extremely problematic. And going, reinforcing a little bit what Tucker said, I see your point, Eric, but I think the university and SACS have a lot of standards according to that, and we have to meet a certain numbers of PhDs in every program. At least our department relies a huge deal on our instructors, and they do an amazing job, and I think they deserve some security. And at least from my side, I wouldn't like to see every year having them wait till the end of the semester in order to see if they will be renewed when they do an amazing job and they serve so many students of ours.
You know, this is Aaron Wickman again. It seems like part of this will be solved with just earlier notification of instructors. Another part of it is, for instance, especially, you know, I mentioned teaching German and modern languages. I know in some areas we use lots and lots of instructors, and since we know they're necessary, can we convert some of these positions into pedagogical faculty positions? In which case you do a search, you attract people from certainly all over the country. You're going to have different kinds of, then the dynamic changes.
Dick Taylor, just as a point of clarification.
Sorry. go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. As a point of clarification, when the committee went over this, we found there were two kinds of classifications. One is professionals and residents, which have a multi-year appointment option for the leaders of those departments to exercise, and then there were instructors that did not have a multi-year option available. And so we looked at that and said it appeared to us the only way we could rationally deal with this to people that we value was to open up a 10-year track. The other thing that comes down to, as I was saying it to Tucker at our meeting, I was at the 25-year and retirement dinner the other evening, and one of our instructors from the School of Journalism and Broadcasting, who is very valued and teaches some of our law courses and really critical courses, was inducted into the 25-year club. And what we found was there's a notification process that says at the end of the first year, coming up to the end of the first year, the person's supposed to be notified by March 1st of their continuance. Thereafter, they should be notified by not later than December 15th. Now, it's anecdotal, but I only talked to a couple of people to find out if that system was working, and I found out it is not. They basically look at the fact if a pink slip doesn't show up in their mailbox before the semester ends, they're good for another year. And that seems to be another area that we were concerned about is, even though there is a notification system, is it being used?
That's what the provost was meant by noted as good news, the way the policy rates.
Sorry, yeah, so Tucker, do you want to clarify that? Because I think the way it's...
The way the policy 1.2000 reads, I think it just says they only have to be notified if they're being terminated. So that's no news is good news kind of thing.
All right, thank you. And yes.
It seems to me that this resolution is the beginning of a process, and we're not going to reach an end today. And I certainly support the goal of giving greater job security for long-term instructors and qualified instructors. So I would like to move the following amendment, that the last line read, therefore be it resolved that the university work on a system to provide promotion and greater job security for instructors. Because I think tenure is obviously that's going to be contentious. Obviously, this is going to have to be studied. And I think the Senate's going to have to play a role in that. So I'd like us to, as a body, to express our approval of those goals. And then we're obviously going to spend next year talking about, okay, what's that going to entail? Because just asking for tenure for instructors, I don't think moves us forward very far. We have to have a sketched out a map how we think we're going to get there.
I'll second that if you need it.
Second. Okay. Okay, so it's up here. So the change would be, instead of it saying, therefore it be resolved that the university work on a system for tenure and promotion system for instructors, it would say then, therefore it be resolved that the university work on a system to provide promotion and greater job security to instructors.
Do you have it written down?
It says, work on a system to provide promotion and greater job security for instructors.
It's exactly what I just typed.
And I might add that the Senate might conclude next year that that is some form of tenure. But I think we just can't vote for tenure without actually, as I say, having some idea of if that's our goal, how we're going to get there.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second.
This is an informational question. Robert, is it implicit? It seems implicit in this motion that this goes back to faculty welfare as the place where that study begins. Is that your intent?
Well, no, this isn't being, I mean, it's not being sent back. This would be the will of the Senate, but I would think then the Senate would follow up in the fall by saying, all right,
go to faculty welfare.
Either this committee or an ad hoc committee is going to explore this in consultation with, I mean, there's going to be a lot of bodies in the university dealing with this.
Sure. Okay, thanks.
Okay, any further discussion on the change, on the amendment of the resolution? Okay, so we'll vote on the amendment to the resolution. So all those in favor of the resolution as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thanks very much.
Good job, Laura. That seems fair. Okay, I don't know if someone's going to email that to me because I don't have it right now.
All right, so we move on. There's no report from General Education. And Colonnade Implementation Committee, no report, although we do have some items we'll get to under new business. University Committee reports. There is one that we will add to this with your consent, and that is the legislative committee report that we will add in as a third item on that with your consent. So are there any opposition to adding in legislative committee report?
Where was that listed?
Sorry, that's under university committee reports. And so this is just a third item under university committee reports. I would like to see if there is any opposition to adding in a third item to the university committee reports, which would be the legislative committee report.
I'd like to read it before I
listen. It's just a report of what the legislative committee has been doing. I did not get this prior to the meeting.
It's a summary of what I've said from the legislative committee over the course of several reports this semester. So it's my report. It's a summary of what I've delivered at three different meetings, just put into one report. Like all the stuff about House Bill 333 and stuff like that.
These are just information items, aren't they? They require action.
They're just reports that don't require action. That's exactly right. They're just university committee reports. I simply put them under reports as being that we do have several university committees on which senators sit, and that they are required to give reports at least annually to the Senate. And this simply provided kind of a separate section to show that we are fulfilling some of those university committee reports that need to be done. So is there any opposition to that? Okay, hearing none, we will add the legislative committee report as a third item on that. That will be posted, by the way, after the meeting, so we will have that posted by probably tomorrow afternoon at least. So our first university committee report is the Campus Library Advisory Council annual report. Is someone here to provide us with that? I think I sent him the email. Okay, well, it is there for you to peruse, so please take a look at that Campus Library Advisory Council annual report. I was definitely pleased to get it. The second item is Benefits Committee. We have several folks here. Klaus is here, certainly, who helped put this together. We've also, I think, got, I don't know if Kelly and Rich and Jerry are here. Okay. If you'd like to come up here, or you can take one of the microphones from one of the tables, however you'd like to do that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Excellent.
So you have seen a summary in the notes, and I want to just elaborate on this a little bit, because what you will see that next year, if everything goes as the Benefits Committee intends, we will see the most changes we have seen in healthcare in a long time. And so let me just elaborate where we're coming from. So in 2013, we lost about $2 million. When I say we lost, it means we took $2 million out of the reserve to balance the healthcare account. From this year, as far as we know, for the first quarter of this year, our experience has been good, meaning we are slightly in the positive. But that doesn't mean very much, because from month to month, it is possible that we have $1 million difference in the outcome. And so over the last couple, 10 years maybe, we have on the average an inflation rate of about 7 to 8%. And so if you just put this in the context, if we wanted to make up the $2 million, we cannot take these $2 million out of the reserve again. We need to make some changes. $2 million is roughly the equivalent of a 1.5% rate. So this is a non-trivial amount of money, because it is reoccurring money. It's permanent. And so the Benefits Committee has been working on addressing this issue. And so one of the key things we would like to do is we would like to actually impact the medical inflation rate we experience on our campus. And in order to do this, we have hired a new consulting company, Simpson Consulting. I personally have to say I've been very impressed with them. They have been sharp. They have been quite clear in what they want to do. And so what I will tell you now is sort of where we're going. And what you should keep in mind, this is unofficial in the sense there exists only a draft of these plans. I don't think Administrative Council has been approving these plans. And I cannot tell you any numbers, because the way this goes, you're going to calculate the premiums at the very last moment, because we have this large fluctuation. We want to have as much data as possible. meaning that these premium calculations take probably place in August. And so most of the decisions will have to be made before the Senate actually reconvenes, okay, because we have to, I mean, sign up for the next year happens in November, and so things have to be done by the end of September. And so I'm just going to tell you roughly of where we're going. So the first thing you should be aware of, that at least as far as the faculty on the committee is concerned, we all want to maintain a cost sharing between the employer and the employee. The other thing, what we would like to do, we would like to be competitive with benchmarks. And so one of the things which makes us very different from our benchmarks is that our insurance premiums, as they currently calculate, have a flat contribution rate from WKU, while most of our competitors have that tiered by family status. So the main goal, what we're trying to do, is we want to have a healthy campus culture. And how we want to achieve that is we want to give much more plan choice than we currently have. So to sum this up, our current plans, in the medical lingua, they're called PPO, point of service. And so the difference between these plans is essentially the co-payments, the deductibles, and the maximum out-of-pocket. But otherwise, they're more or less identical. What we would like to do is move to very different plans. And so one of the plans we currently discuss is an HSA type of plan, which means what? Which means that essentially the university will provide upfront funding, which gets put into an account. Now, if you then go to the doctor, you essentially have not a co-payment, but you will have to pay everything up to a certain level. And then the insurance plan kicks in. And so the point of this is that this is make you a more price conscientious consumer. So if you are in this plan, then you can essentially, if you have money saved up, and you can keep it from year to year and accumulate it. So this will be one of the plans we're currently proposing. We will maintain one of the plans as the PPO plan we currently have, which is somewhat similar to what we currently have. Now, a couple more things. We would like to increase wellness. And so currently you're probably aware of that you can earn a limited number of dollars in terms of wellness. We want to increase this amount and again have a different funding mechanism to basically have you more involved into the health decisions you make. And so what would that mean? Well, currently what you see is that you currently have a flat copayment. Now, we might move this to something called co-insurance, which means you're going to pay a certain percentage of the medical cost. And in terms of the wellness, what the university would do in return is provide you with some sort of initial funds. So currently we earn, if you do this wellness thing, $180. We would like to more than double that, maybe in the ballpark of $500. And then basically you would have to pay some of the initial costs yourself. It's not handled by a co-payment. We would like to have a smoking policy. So the committee has voted to have a non-smoking campus, and the committee has voted to have a smoker surcharge. So currently this is just you declare yourself, you're a smoker or I'm a non-smoker. But basically, all of this aims at creating a more healthy campus. It creates the overall goal is to increase decrease the potential rise of annual costs. The Senate can help with this. How? Well, for example, a non-smoking campus would have to have probably a Senate endorsement, whether this would happen or not. The way the committee felt about it, that if we have a smoking surcharge, then we ought to be a smoke-free campus. But doing basically having smoking allowed on campus and having smoking surcharge is inconsistent. So the bottom line is there will be lots of changes. The biggest changes you will have seen since we moved to Anthem in 2003. Okay, and they all will aim at having you more involved in the healthcare decisions. And we will restructure the plans in the sense that things which are preventive, they will remain free. We will have some disease management components. So if somebody has diabetes, chronically ill, We don't want that these people are losers under this new system. So we will try to put some steps in place to balance that out. But there will be lots of choices, and there will be lots of changes. Anybody who basically in the next year, if this gets approved, is essentially going to the doctor without carefully reading what you actually sign up for, may be in for a really, really bad surprise. So, questions? Thank you.
Actually, before we move to questions, I'd just like to emphasize two of the things that Klaus said. I'm Kelly Rames. I'm one of the Senate representatives to the Wellness Committee. Benefits Committee. Thank you, Patty. But that's one of the things I wanted to emphasize is what we're looking at is a much greater participation in wellness and wellness being a bigger part of the plan, meaning that for the health savings account option or the HRA option in which money is put into an account for employees to use, you would get double the money essentially if you participate in wellness and half the money if you did not. So that's part of it. The other thing is when I joined this committee was not that familiar with different types of health plans. These are consumer-driven health plans that we're looking at. And if you aren't familiar with those, if I were an employee not on this committee, what I would want to do right now is find out more about those and look at the type of model we're talking about moving to and see how I felt about it. Regardless of whether we stayed with the current model we have for 2014 and have had for years, or move to a different model, the bottom line is with increasing health costs, we're all going to be paying more for health care, and the university is also going to have to contribute more to our health care.
One thing I think we need to keep in mind is that the university has consistently reduced its contribution. Right? I mean, there's been a shift from the institution covering costs to the individuals. Would you say that was fair, Klaus?
I have purported that, I think,
yeah,
in the fall.
Okay.
So what I'd
like us to be careful of is as we go to multiple possibilities and new plans, that doesn't become a smokescreen for further shifting of cost from the university to individual employees. Because 10 years ago, we were at one of the top schools in the state.
Exactly.
Now we're down the bottom third. We live in this peculiar universe where things that can happen at other universities just can't happen on this campus, apparently. But anyway, I would ask the committee members to be careful that this doesn't become an opportunity for more rapid shift of cost to the employees.
Without going into any numbers, Robert, the only thing I can tell you is that the current proposal which the committee has voted on does ask the university to step up considerably. Okay, and so I certainly none of the faculty members on the committee want to deviate from this position. Now, as I said, this is a draft proposal. Everything is preliminary, and if the Senate wants to weigh in on any such issue, then. But you have to be clear on, this is the only time you can do it. By the time you will reconvene, basically things are going to be done. That's just the nature of how this works. Okay.
Matt Pruitt, Sociology. Why have there not been any type of information sessions held on campus explaining? Because I think a lot of us don't have much familiarity with HSA-type programs. Some of my friends who do work for the Heavies, I mean, a lot of times you can have pretty large out-of-pocket expenses before insurance kicks in, like in the realm of thousands of dollars. Are there going to be information sessions? Who's
yes.
going to make this decision,
yes.
and when will
yes.
it be determined?
At this point, this is a plan. As I said, this doesn't have administrative approval at this point. I'm just reporting to you on a preliminary plan.
But it's the recommendation.
We are very much aware of that education is absolutely essential if we're going to move forward with such a model. And we will take lots of steps to make this happen. But before we start educating people, we have to have agreement to move forward with this.
But how can we agree when a lot of us aren't really familiar with what these plans will look like, and especially like how would the HSA option maybe affect the way in which a PPO might be structured? I mean, are there not impacts of having that as an option on how the PPO is going, would look?
Yes. And again, what you're asking is, the matter is quite delicate, technical. So the way I can only describe it, that even so I have been on the committee for a long time, for me to understand what these consultants are aiming at takes a several hour session. And I do not believe that at this stage we can do this to faculty overall. I mean, you've got to rely on that the representatives you have on this committee are speaking up for faculty interests. Okay. The education will take place, absolutely.
The education will be informed of how this works, as opposed to after a decision's been made to go in this route?
Yes, what Klaus is talking about is education after this decision has been made, and what you're asking for is, well, the committee makes a recommendation, the president makes the decision. What you're asking for is education before that recommendation is made. So yes, y'all are talking about two different things.
For us to support, or I mean, at some level, this, and it seems like we don't. Maybe I'm an oddity here, but I really have no idea what this is going to look like. And it seems like I'm going to find out in September, after the president perhaps accepts a recommendation from a committee of 7 or 8 individuals. And it's sort of scary. I have one other comment after this, but I'll stop for a second.
I understand your feeling, and I mean, what you have to keep in mind is the following: we ran a $2 million hole, right? We are not in a position that we could say we're going to continue business as usual. Why? Because, I mean, the benefit committee cannot put funds into existence which we don't have. So we have to come up with a plan which we believe is manageable, and that's what we're doing.
But it would be nice if perhaps there was some way in which the larger campus community could have the knowledge that y'all have at this point, that it can somehow be expressed, some of the things you've heard, some of the ways in which things are being considered, as opposed to sort of just being dropped on. Let me just move off to one other point here. There's a big difference. I mean, whether we're going to do a surcharge for smoking is something that needs to be discussed, and would we surcharge for other health risks, things that are contributors, things that are associated with higher health expenditures, is why smoking as opposed to some of these other factors. I would also think, just want to make a point, that it's somewhat of a false dichotomy to say, this is maybe the best phrasing, but to say that if we are going to even have a smoking surcharge, that necessarily means that we need to be a smoke-free campus. It's incredible to me that at a time when we are competing with universities over the next 10 years, where it's going to be a declining number of students graduating from high school, that we're going to say to prospective students, this is a smoke-free campus. We require you to live in dorms for 2 years, but yet you cannot go outside and smoke. It doesn't seem very sound at a time when we were talking earlier about budget problems due to decreasing enrollment to have such a policy.
Yeah. Any such item is up to the Senate to make a resolution about, you know. I mean, we are just a committee, and we put forward a plan. This is just a recommendation, and that's all it is, you know. I do not believe that the committee alone will make this decision. What I have been told is that Ransell has said he doesn't want to go to a smoke-free campus without a Senate and a staff council.
But I'm just making a comment as a senator, because it's been stated by you and then also in this document that Senate support is going to be very much needed for such a movement. And I'm just speaking as a member of the Senate, as a deliberative body, that I think that's a very unwise decision.
Jill Brown, Liberal Arts and Sciences. I agree with a lot of the things that are on the report. I also was concerned about the smoking policy because I quit smoking quite a long time ago, 92 maybe, so it's been over 20 years. When I filled out my wellness report, because I am in the wellness program, it doesn't look like I quit smoking when you read that report. So I've already admitted that I've been a smoker, so I feel like I'm going to be charged a premium. So I'm a little concerned about the different stages of being a smoker, quitting smoking, and how that's going to be reported. Because it's been over 20 years that I quit smoking, so I'm concerned about that as well.
I think that's a separate
part of this as president. Is that correct?
The committee has made the recommendation that we move forward with this.
Oh,
and the way it currently initially would work, it's simply a self-declared statement you make. Okay, so in your case, it would be just you said none, and that's all there is to it. Okay. Again, I'm putting this out there. These are ideas which have not been approved by anybody. Okay, and so I welcome the Senate to make a resolution which could directly address this, either saying no, we are against this, or we're for it. Either way, okay. Certainly, I think that will be listened to.
Eric Condrati of History. I had a couple of questions. I know that, for instance, in over the last year, we've already increased our contributions and also the size of our co-pays and also the amount that we pay for medication. So far, it's cost my family an extra $300 or $400, which in a year without a raise means a pay cut. Now, what you're proposing, especially if these deductibles or co-pays or co-insurance, whatever you want to call it, for the HSAs are flat rates for people, then what's that going to mean for junior faculty who are living on a lot less than, say, senior faculty? I know that sounds maybe sort of self-serving or something like that, but the impact would be much greater if, for somebody making $48,000 or $50,000 versus somebody who's been around for a while making $90,000, right? And so there's a serious disadvantage already then to younger faculty, and these kind of increased costs could actually serve to drive people into the arms of other universities, for instance. What are you thinking about? Is there any sort of linkage of a percentage rate to what people make as their co-insurance, or is it just going to be per individual co-insurance?
A European style socialist system would do things in a percentage. Those of you who know me, I'm from Germany. Would I vote for such a system? Immediately. Okay? But I do not believe any such idea is currently under discussion. Before we would go there, we would actually address the family tier status first. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so what we currently do is we have a flat contribution rate. I don't have any answer for your question. Okay? Mm-hmm. The thing you guys should be very much aware of, we have a $2 million hole. Mm-hmm. We need to do something in order to plug it. Okay, when I came to the Senate in the fall, I made it very clear, I believe, that unless the Senate makes a really, really strong push to find funds for doing this, we will be forced into a situation by which we just cannot continue business as usual.
Well, true, it should be a priority because we have an aging population of faculty. I mean,
we do not. We do not.
Well, I think we're all getting older.
No, we do not. We're tracking the medium age of all employees in our system. I've been on this committee for over 10 years. It has basically stayed flat. Okay, it has changed maybe by a year, but overall it has stayed flat. Aging, overaging is a non-issue. Okay.
Just a couple more questions, and then we'll see if we can get, if we need to get a resolution or whatever we need to do. So.
And sort of in the interest of moving things forward, it seems like there's an awful lot of concern among the faculty, and I'm sure the staff too, about how we might be impacted by these decisions, and if it were possible to have sessions where our voices could be heard, where we could contribute to that conversation, I think that would make people feel like, on the one hand, the process is a lot more transparent, and on the other hand, like, we do actually have a voice, that this isn't something that's going to be imposed upon us, and then we, you know, are left to, you know, react in whatever way we want, but without any kind of effect. So what I would like is perhaps for the Benefits Committee to find some way to have some forums or hearings once you do have a better sense of what the options might be. And I really want to stress that I like the idea of being able to hear about options rather than a dictate, I guess.
Yes, Dick.
The Human Resources Department, along with Wade Pickard and the Health and Wellness Program, has pointed out that as we take down the reserve, we're getting perilously close to reaching the point where the government United States government steps in, Klaus, correct me if I'm wrong, and says, you guys can't self-insure anymore. You now got to go into the free market. And as I understand it, if that's not true. That's what they told us at the meetings I went to, and they said we have a cushion, and you must maintain a certain cushion in your program to ensure the program. And if you can't maintain that cushion, then you go to a different kind of system. That's incorrect.
Can I address that?
Sure.
So the way you have to think of our self-insurance program, it is in a lot of other ways like workers' comp, we're self-insured. What does that mean? It means if we are losing money, the university has to come up with some money. We have a reserve fund, which is basically there to moderate the ups and downs in the expenses. There's no mandate of any government that I'm aware of that we have to maintain a certain kind of certain amounts of money in this fund. So the way this is thought about is as follows. If, for whatever reason, and this was an issue about maybe 5-6 years ago, the state would force us to join the state insurance plan, then we would be in a situation when the new plan year comes around that we will have to pay rates to the state, while at the same time we still have to pay the incoming costs from the previous plan year. So there's roughly a lag time of 3 months. Okay, and so basically what that would amount to is that for the first 3 months of such a new year, you would have to pay the new plan plus the old plan. And because of that, actuarially, you would say that you would like to have 25% of your annual business in a reserve simply because if somebody would force you out of self-insurance, that you suddenly don't have the whole. And we are now below that 25%. But this is just an internal regulation. This is not something which is mandated to us by anything. What we do to prevent risk, we have a reinsurance, which essentially means for people who go over a certain threshold, $250,000 per year, we have an insurance carrier which kicks in. And so that sort of lessens the risk Western takes on. But ultimately, with a self-insurance plan, if we go in a big hole, Western is obligated to pay it. That's as simple as that.
All I was trying to determine was what the alternative was if we don't move forward. And it seems to me that the alternative could be bleaker than what you're proposing at this point for Senate.
Well, what could literally happen if we do nothing that this, and it could happen this year already, the reserve fund is depleted. We still have to pay for this year. We're contractually obligated to pay plan expenses for this year. So if the reserve fund is depleted and the premiums are not enough, the university has to find the money. Okay? How will they find the money? Well, that's above my pay grade, but they will have to find the money. Okay?
Okay, so what... Oh, yes.
I'd like to move the following resolution. The Faculty Senate calls upon WKU to increase its contribution to employee health insurance to return WKU to the top one-third of the Kentucky colleges and universities. You know, we were there once and now at the bottom.
Yes.
And for years, they've told us, well, you can have salaries or you can have health insurance. And now the message is, well, you can't have either one. Right? So there's no way today we're going to be able to sort out details of the plans or how to do it. But I do think that it's time for us to stop being the whipping boy, boys and girls of this university financially. They have taken from us and taken from us. It's always, if you want X, you got to give up Y. And we just have to stop being quiet about it.
Okay, so a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Okay, so could you repeat the resolution one more time?
The University Senate calls upon the WKU to increase its contribution to employee health insurance to return WKU to the top one-third of Kentucky colleges and universities.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Any discussion on that motion? Okay, all those in favor of this motion for the resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Dr. Dottle, could you please get me that resolution? Thank you. One other thing that I'd like to say in just talking to Kelly just a moment ago and hearing your concerns about this, that if you would like to have an open forum of some sort, it would need to be within the next couple of weeks, within the next week or so. I don't know how many people will be around for that, but that is the timeline, that this would need to be within the next couple of weeks. So if someone would like to request, and certainly we can do that, I can do that outside of Senate, that's fine, but if Senate would like to request there to be a faculty forum to be held, I'd be happy to entertain that motion. Okay, would you like to make a motion, please?
Who is it?
I can't make a motion.
Lauren McLean, sociology. I'd like to make a motion that the benefits committee, I guess, hold a open forum for university faculty and staff in the next few weeks so that we could learn more about all of these changes and make an informed decision in giving our support or not.
Okay, thank you. Can I get a second on that?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion on the floor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I'm happy to elaborate on that, but I don't want to take time.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Okay. So moving on to our third item, which is the legislative committee report.
You've heard it all before. It will be a recap of all of the things that the legislature did, the good, giving us more state money, the also good, funding part of the KERS retirement, the good that the idea of substituting computer language for foreign language was defeated, and there was one more good thing. But anyway, it will summarize all of those things that you've heard about in my reports before. If you have any questions now, I'm happy to take them. But it will simply be a summary of what you've already heard in my reports.
Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to our items of new business. We don't have any old business that I know of. New business, we have colonnade courses for approval. Could I get a motion for approval of the slate? And we have a second as well. Who did the second? Okay. All those in favor, any discussion of those, sorry. All those in favor of approval of the colonnade courses for approval, the entire slate, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks very much. Second item of new business, we come to the substantive revisions to the handbook, and Mac, you have the floor.
Well, before we march through these, I just want to thank the committee for all their hard work this semester. It's a great committee. They're very bright people. They do hard work. We get it done once a month in less than 2 hours. And so I just want to thank them for their service. I was hoping that my chairmanship would be done, but Margaret's taking care of that by serving another term, which means that more than likely, at least for the fall semester, I'll be chairing the committee again, and we do have matters that we know we'll be looking at. We were trying to do the most expedient and the most important things first. That said, I guess we'll just march through these.
One more. This is pretty important stuff. Do we still have a forum?
I'm pretty sure we do.
I'm sure we do.
When do we count? 34.
So, yes, we still have quorum. So, moving through these items, we have the lecturer appointments. This is a revised item. It had come through Senate before, was sent back to handbook, and has been since revised. So, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, just very briefly, this was sent back. The hang-up on this in the previous Senate meeting was the fact that the language in the statute doesn't allow people called lecturers to vote in the once every 3 year region elections. Basically, we're bringing back the same proposal. We can really find a crafty way to name these people something that wouldn't look silly or be stupid. There was also some additional data that was requested with regard to the number of hires into this category, which range anywhere from 3 to 10 people over the last 5 years. You know, there are committee members here who can speak to this. From my vantage point, the change in the handbook does more good than harm, the only harm being that someone might not get to vote in a region's election. That's not assured because they only happen every 3 years. Someone who completes their dissertation or whatever their terminal degree is in that 2 year window wouldn't be affected. And someone who didn't do that would only be in the employ of the university for another year and then be gone, so they might be voting in a region's election when they're not even going to be around to enjoy the benefits of whoever they might vote for. I just think it's a I think it's a matter of trying to you know, take the better, the lesser of two evils, I guess, would be my position on it.
Okay. Yes. Comment.
Again, I had a different question about this. I was just wondering, I know it says the appropriate documentation such as an official transcript, and I was just wondering if a letter from the university on letterhead saying that they had defended their dissertation would suffice. I'm just thinking about the timeline. You know, someone could defend in, say, you know, end of July, beginning of August, start their appointment here, but they don't officially graduate until December, and then there's always lag time between when an official transcript is completed and could be forwarded on, and I'm just thinking it could be a long time before that person's position changes, and particularly their salary, and I was just wondering also the rationale between saying the next academic year and not just the next pay period.
As far as some sort of an official stamp, I really need to defer to the provo on that.
Yeah, the approval of appropriate documentation individually appointed to the next academic term, so it would be a maximum up to the remainder of the semester. This is fairly typical. We did discuss this at CAD, and we ended up agreeing that any official letter of degree requirements complete from a university registrar or the dean of the graduate school, whichever sends those letters from that institution, we would not wait until the actual transcript. However, we would certainly require the transcript in due course for SAC COC reasons and all kinds of things, but it is generally accepted that a degree requirements complete letter from a registrar is acceptable.
Yes.
You can't have anything tied to pay period because all personnel actions have to be approved by the board. We do it quarterly. So anything that happens is approved quarterly, but everything works in three-month chunks.
Okay. Any other comments on the lecturer appointments as revised? Yes.
Mac and I have talked about this and agreed to disagree. If you remember the last meeting, we sent this back asking the committee to find a way to preserve the important meat of the proposal, which is set out guidelines for how long you can be ABD before you're out, and a way to preserve the vote. And the committee basically sent back and said, no, too bad. That was the recommendation of the Senate, and the committee's recommendation counter was, well, no, we're good. That's the way we think that dynamic should run, then fine. But
I think you're being a little harsh. I would say that the committee's coming back and saying, we've done the best we can. You all decide what you want to do. It's your vote.
Yes.
This is Yvonne Petkus, and I'm on the committee as well. And we discussed it at length and tried to come up with another way, and it felt dishonest to call a lecturer something else when that's what it is. And the consensus was that this isn't a university problem. This is a legislature problem. So if we want to have lecturers be allowed to vote in a region's election, that has to be done. And the statute itself has to change, not like funny footwork to make it happen.
But I would point out they're only going to be called lecturers because we're changing the name. They're called instructors now. So this is a university problem. We're deciding to rename them something else, and then that name puts them beyond the laws as now written. And you're right, it's only a few people, but it seems to me we can't push it off in the legislature. It's the university deciding we're going to call these people something different.
Okay, so is there any further discussion on the lecturer appointments as revised? No, we don't yet. Okay, so actually we do need a motion on it, a motion to approve.
So
can I get a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion on this item? Okay. All those in favor of approval of the handbook change lecturer appointments as revised, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We're going to probably need a show of hands on this. Opposed? Can we get opposed?
Who's the second?
Dick Taylor. Was the second. We'll get. I just wanted to make sure that we actually needed that, but I figured we probably would. So opposed again. Who was that?
We did.
Okay. So. Okay, so let's go with it. Sorry. Let's go with the ayes. Can we get a count? The ayes.
Okay. Put your hands way up.
Way up.
Like kindergarten class all over again.
Yeah. What?
What'd you get?
Yeah.
Okay. 25.
Okay. All those opposed?
I'm not sure.
Hands way up opposed, please.
How many
does
are
pass.
Abstaining? Is anyone abstaining? Are there any abstentions?
Any abstentions, sorry.
One, two, three, four.
All right, thanks very much. Moving on to our next item, which is instructor ranks. Can I get a motion for approval of that before discussion? Can we get a second? Okay, and discussion.
Yeah, I'd love to make a comment. What I'd like to do is actually make a motion to refer this to Faculty Welfare Committee, possibly Academic Quality Committee, and this is the reason. As the promotion guidelines now are written, it's going to be a very different process than the one we have for tenure track faculty. For tenure track faculty, everybody on the department's tenure and promotion committee is involved. For instructors, that's not currently the case. In there, we ask instructors to evaluate other instructors without giving them clear criteria to do so. There's no mention of any continuing education requirements for instructors. On the promotion committee, relative to faculty, instructors are overrepresented. There's no rationale provided for this. You know, all tenured faculty vote on the first promotion of an assistant professor. Does it make sense to have this type of arrangement for instructors as well? And also, as they're now written, instructors from other departments could be included in the promotion process, and these people are not qualified or potentially not qualified to really evaluate the content that instructor is delivering. The promotion process is happening internally to a college. The provost and the president are not currently, as written, in the loop, although that is provided as a route for an appeal. And then there are other questions. So does a promotion lead to changes in salary or benefits? If that's the case, where does the money come from? How do we budget for instructors? Do you have to be a full-time faculty position if you're an instructor, or do we include adjuncts? What happens if you're hired, then you're fired, and then you're rehired.
Do you have this written down?
No.
I can't get all this. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to impose any additional burden on you. I was trying to give a...
You should have stopped after referred, and you'd have been good, I think.
Okay. Thank you. Forgive me for going on. But anyway, so I can go on a little bit more length.
We are.
Yeah. So, but that's part of my justification for wanting to refer it to faculty welfare. I'm not sure about the Academic Quality Committee. Maybe you could advise on that.
Is there a second?
Yeah, there's no second.
I second.
On Aaron's.
I second, Chanel.
You want to ask for a vote?
So the motion is to refer this back to faculty welfare?
Well, the first motion was to approve.
The first motion was to approve. Now we have a new motion on the floor, which is to refer to committee. So is there any further discussion on the motion to refer to faculty welfare?
The first motion was to approve.
The first motion was to approve, right? So, but the second motion takes precedence.
So
you're voting on the motion to refer it to faculty welfare. So, all those in favor of referring this back to faculty welfare, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Moving on to the Board of Regents handbook approval. Can I get a motion, please?
Second.
Discussion?
Just for context, there was quite a long discussion about this within the committee as well. And to be honest, I think the committee was pretty divided on this. And if my memory serves me correctly, the faculty's already logged in on this twice. It was sent as a proposed change during last academic year and was not accepted. Essentially, what you have back to now is the same proposal. So, again, this is this is an issue that you all have to resolve. And from my position as chair of the committee, I would say two things. One, I've been fairly consistent in my position that certainly BOR approval of this document is within their purview, and I think the president, in the second paragraph of his memo about this, made it clear that it is. I don't want to say I stopped reading the memo after that, but I mean that was a critical point for me, that it is within the Board of Regents' charge duties under statute. The second thing is, I think when you vote on this, you have to vote on what you think is best for the faculty, and I think there's some fairly polarized opinions on that. That's all I got. Unless any of the committee members want to chirp in, I guess you're the only one here, Yvonne.
Some of the committee members felt very strongly against this, and some felt very strongly for it, and for all the same reasons that have been brought up here. And there was something brought up by the provost about a shift in the chain of how things get approved, not just that the Board of Regents does, but if that happens, you can probably talk to this a little bit more clearly than I can, but that it wouldn't go to the Academic Affairs Office? No, it would go straight?
It goes to the provost and the president.
Okay, because there was a big discussion about that the actual chain of how this gets approved would change, and that was brought up as well. So,
no, that's not correct.
Okay, so is there further...
Yeah, I don't know why people are so frightened of this. Board of Regents voted and approved the faculty handbook for years while I was on the board, and the skies didn't fall, the earth didn't tremble. I mean, the president didn't rewrite it all.
And the same president.
I mean, I have to say, I'm a little, I guess I'm a cynic, because when we got that nasty gram for the president about, boy, if you do this, it made me wonder, what's the big deal all of a sudden? This is something that's done by a majority of the boards in the state, and seems like they're still functioning, and they haven't been sanctioned by AAUP. I really don't understand why a practice which is fairly widespread gets these rather vague but sort of threatening, a vague but threatening memo from the president. It just strikes me as an overreaction.
Yes,
Wickman here. You know, I think maybe some of the resistance comes from people wanting to have a sense of self-determination. The idea of putting another body potentially in the loop, ceding control to that other body, rubs people, I think, the wrong way. In many other places, people do this. People do all kinds of things. They don't vaccinate their kids. They jump off cliffs. But just because my friend jumps off cliffs and lives to tell about it doesn't make me do it. So I come down on the self-determination side of this. I like the sense that we can more be more directly in control of the day-to-day operating procedures here.
Yes, Lauren.
Seems like there's a lot of talking at this table going on today. Sorry about that. I just wanted to point out in the rationale for the amendment that. I mean, I totally see what you say about what you're saying about that. You know, we should have sort of self-determination, but we do because we vote on everything that goes into this handbook. They are just sort of the final eyes on it, and you know, like we say in this rationale, that the board is to establish policies and make decisions about a range of university issues involving the faculty. They are the final say on tenure, promotion, employment, raises. A lot of things that you know are policy related, and so it seems to make sense that they should also be the one sort of just looking at this policy, looking at our handbook, saying, you know, yes, we give the final say. And I mean, ultimately, hopefully, the board has the university's best interests at heart, and so I think having extra sets of eyes, particularly legal eyes, things like that on it, is not a bad thing. And I think given the number of universities that do this, including our benchmarks in-state, out-of-state, it just seems silly not to have them have the final say on this when they have the final say on so many other things that are in the handbook.
Okay. Yes, Rob.
I'd also argue that there's a benefit to having the board vote on it, and it's not just, you know, lemons going over the cliff altogether. Once they vote on it, it cannot be changed except by another vote of the board. And I like that assurance that once the university senate has approved something, it's gone up the line, that's set until the next time we have a set of changes that go forward. I don't want a faculty handbook that can be fiddled with, and I think this is one more protection in that regard.
Is there other discussion on this item?
Quickly. Mark,
yes.
Oh. I just want to make one point. It's a point of clarification to Senator Wickman's point about self-determination. This body does have self-determination as much as it's going to on faculty handbook, that nothing can go forward if this body doesn't approve it. But there is now, whether, and if this passes, that won't change, it goes to the provost. I mean, the provost has turned back a couple of things in the past, and that's his purview to do it. I mean, that's the way that the chain of command works. I want to make it very clear that anything that goes to the Board of Regents will not change a word that this body passes and will not add anything that this body doesn't pass. It will subtract nothing that this body passes. The Board of Regents only has the power, and this is the way your course proposals work too, like your majors, your minors, all that stuff. It's an up or down vote. And you've probably noticed what the track record on the no votes is at the Board of Regents. If you need the stats, then I'll give it to you. They pass everything. And I don't see any reason that they wouldn't now. It's best practices other places, and I think that Senator Dytle said it the best.
if you want self-determination, this locks it in with a board vote, and I don't know, have any idea why anybody would not want that. Okay?
Further discussion on this before we vote?
Well, I think as long as the board supports Faculty Senate, we'll all be really happy if this passes.
And we always do, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if we're assured of their support anyway, why bother having them vote?
Well, maybe I could ask a question so everybody's perfectly clear. It is possible that the president could bring the Faculty Senate approved document to the board and tell them that he does not support its approval. Is that correct?
Actually, he does. Well, it's technically correct, but that's not the way that the president operates. And I think I don't feel comfortable speaking for him like 99% of the time, but I feel very comfortable saying that he doesn't like to bring things to the board that he doesn't support. And truthfully, again, the president is where all policies stop, right? All policies, handbooks, student code of conduct, all that stuff. You know, the president approves it. Whether he delegates that to Provost Emsley to be the final authority, which is what is current, more or less, been the current practice, but the truth is, it has his silent assent. This doesn't change that. It just takes whatever it is that Provost Emsley approves and takes it to the board. So again, he doesn't have line item authority either. It does mean that in theory, if he didn't like something, he could send it back. But that doesn't mean you don't have a handbook. That means you have a 19th, to use this as an example, it means you have a 19th edition of a handbook. You have what you've currently got. You know, but the provost could do the same thing. I'm pretty sure it's not likely in this case, but in theory it is likely that you would just have what you've got. But the same thing happens with us, too. If we turn down something today or we just referred something to faculty welfare, then that goes to faculty welfare for a year. It doesn't go into the handbook. That's the way that the approval process works. So, again, it's no different than anything else that we do. And the benefit of this is, A, best practices. B, it constitutionalizes it. Again, it's a more binding document. And, again, I don't know why faculty wouldn't want that, because it protects your rights. It protects your rights. Things can't come up and down in the middle of the night. Things can't move around. They have to have the board's ratification. Can't change something mid-year that's substantive. It has to have the board's ratification.
And I just want to make it clear that I'm not taking a position one way or the other, but I think one of the big mysteries for people is the process. What can happen to the document, what can't happen, et cetera. And I just wanted to make sure everybody's clear.
It goes up, just like yeah. Your course proposals. It just goes up.
Call for the question.
Okay. We've had a call for the question.
Who called the question?
So we need to go ahead and vote after we get a call. So let's go ahead and we've got a motion on the floor for approval of this proposed amendment to the Handbook Committee. So from the Handbook Committee. So if we could get a vote of all of those in favor of this approval, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
That's at least one.
It's at least one.
Okay. All right. Any abstentions?
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. Okay. The next item is promotion criteria. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
All right. Discussion of this item. Yes, Lauren.
Microphone.
We just would like a definition of sustained, particularly in the areas of research and service, please.
Definition of sustained.
Well, as you probably know, it used to be tangible, and we didn't know what that meant either. To be quite honest, it was just to use the same language throughout rather than have one that was different. So, again, you know, I think when it comes to sustained, at least this is my viewpoint, and the provost may want to articulate his, That's going to be determined within the department during the process. And I don't know that I could say that every department will define it the same way. And that's the way it works for everything now anyhow. So that's my take on it. But something tells me that there are people who disagree. So, Robert, do you want to chirp in?
Well, since the provost does have a say on all tenure and promotion recommendations that come to him, I'd like to hear his definition of sustained. How will he apply that?
Well, first thing that I have a very well-informed decision to make, or recommendation to make, rather. I would think that sustained is a term that would apply, as, you know, be defined within the department or college T&P guidelines, which are currently, as you know, being written and will, in fact, be taken to the board because that's required. So what's sustained is not necessarily the same in all disciplines. It does not say continuous. It says sustained. It does not say, you know, single example of. It requires some kind of consistent record over an extensive period of time comparable to the time since the last promotion or since the hire in the case of tenure, is my interpretation. But again, the guidance primarily, I think, will come from the college and department T&P documents.
Any further discussion?
Yeah. You know, I know a faculty member that was once considered for a distinguished UDP, University Distinguished Professor position. But, you know, you can't be friends with everyone. And some people that were making the decision noticed that there was a period of her career where she wasn't quite so productive. She'd had a number of major medical problems during that period. She wasn't able to be quite so productive. However, she was no longer showing that continuous / sustained productivity. So are we giving ammunition to people here that may not like the person being evaluated? For instance, if you become a parent, or like me, you have like a crazy semester of allergies that make you not nearly as productive as you'd like to be. That's a concern I have with this. I understand the motive for it. I think it's a good motive. But I wonder how we could protect people that have a medical blip in their productivity.
I could just make one comment, and this, Mac, you may confirm or deny this. I would say, or anybody that was associated with this, I would say that the wording, because the wording was that already in the handbook. It was sustained / tangible, you know, alternating between the two of them. Is that correct? Is that not correct? Okay.
There was only one tangible.
There was one tangible. All the rest of them was sustained. So everything was sustained. There was one tangible left.
Yeah, that's not correct.
Is that not right either?
My ability to sustain tangibility is...
Okay, so this is what it was,
it's
what it is.
All tangibles.
Oh, okay.
It's all
right.
Tangibles and one sustained.
Okay.
It's the other layer.
So what's the difference between tangible and sustained?
Maybe Aaron can tell us it.
Tangible, it could be a one-time or relatively short-term burst of productivity that results in general recognition in one's field. Could be. Sustained is more likely to be interpreted as a continuous progress towards achieving values recognized in one's field. That's how I would see it.
I think tangible could also be, could put your hands on it. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could interpret. It's also open to interpretation. The way that I look at this, and this is, I'll just make this one statement, is that this allows flexibility within the departments for them to set their own tenure and promotion kind of criteria when they're looking at this. So it allows some flexibility within the departments so that it's not at the university level mandating that it be X or Y at the university level. That's the way I'm seeing this, and I could be wrong about that.
You mean tangible?
Tangible.
Yes. Mac, did the committee consider just striking all the modifiers? So it just simply said a record of exceptional high quality performance, a record of exceptional? And, I mean,
no.
Since nobody knows what tangible meant, but we're going to substitute another word.
These were the two intangibles that we dealt with. All I would say, in my defense, is that this was originally proposed as a non-substantive change, and immediately that bad idea gut buzzer went off. So give me some credit for that. At least it allows you to argue about it. And of course, you could argue about it as a non-sub anyway, but I don't know that there's any perfect language. I think Margaret's position that departmentally is where these people are reviewed, and the people who are doing that review interpret things the way they choose to interpret them, and they make recommendations. That's about as far as it can go. I could have probably got out of thesaurus, but I don't know that I would have had any more success. I think it's purposely vague. I mean, it just sometimes life's that way. That's all.
Okay. Further new discussion on this? Yes.
This did come up in the committee meeting that various of us were worried that this word could be used. You know, it's vague until it's not. You know, and when it's used against somebody, as you know, what is sustained? Some of the examples that came up could be a problem. So the answer was that, you know, they were looking at the very specific amount of time that was in the packet to be, to be reviewed. But I like Robert's idea of just taking out that word. If we're saying the intent in the handbook is to be open enough to refer it back to the departmental guidelines, taking out tangible or sustained seems like the perfect answer. Mm-hmm. So I would support that.
Can't do it here.
Okay.
It has to go back to handbook committee.
Put it down. That's your position. I'm not encouraging anybody one way or the other.
Yeah, it can't be edited on the floor. So, yes.
I apologize, but just before voting that down, just keep in mind that then if that word is removed, it does allow maybe someone to do quite a bit early on, maybe if the department store specified a set number of publications, something like that, and then have a period where they've done really nothing and it's not sustained. So it would allow someone to say, I've met the criteria. If you have a certain number of publications, for instance, they came early or they came at the very end, and some departments wish to be able to, maybe they could just with their own documents, require that it's more sustained as opposed to just there.
You're the Senate. This is your decision to make. We bring, you tell us, yay, no, or whatever. But I would say this, and this is something I've had to say consistently throughout this academic year with regard to this handbook. As much as we would love to do it, we cannot policy away every worst case scenario.
Exactly.
There's no way to do that. We would have a handbook as big as this building. Maybe bigger. Sometimes the hard decisions get made by somebody. And so a lot of times I wonder how much time and energy we're wasting arguing over things that might happen. True, they might happen. And they could be awful things. But you know what? You can't policy away every single tough decision and every single headache. You all have to vote on this. I mean, I'm going to be happy one way or the other because I'm tenured. But I know this is important to a lot of people that are not.
Okay, Dick and then
yeah.
Steve.
Well, you know, it's funny. Now everybody got me curious, so I looked up, Googled the word sustained, and it says continuing for an extended period or without interruption. To me, that sounds more forceful than the old word of tangible, which gave them a little more flexibility. When you say without interruption, somebody asked, well, what happens if you get sick? Well, you're not sustained. I think that would be the answer. So it is a pretty critical word.
Did you look up tangible?
Okay. Yes.
Can't be touched.
We've got Steve Miller.
I don't know. You have to ask Robert.
He doesn't know either.
Steve Miller, Education. It seems to me that underlying a lot of what is going on is the possibility that a given person's promotion package can go through committee, department chair, university or college, dean, and then make it to the provost, and there might be, in most instances, that decision is going to be the same, but there are occasionally instances where the provost makes a decision that is different. I think what underlying a lot of this is that we would like a foolproof system that the provost always agrees with those other things, and as Mac just said, there's no way, no matter how much language, that you can guarantee that. There is a degree of discretion that the provost has. We may not always agree when those are different, but I don't think there is any way, unfortunately, to make policies such that the provost will always agree with those decisions. So in that regard, I think Mac is right.
Lauren?
I don't necessarily think that it's about making the decision for the provost, but I just think, like we said, and in the definition of the word sustained, that it could be used against people perhaps in certain instances. But I would just, as a point of order, I guess, earlier when we had things, we made amendments to them. So can we not do that?
Handbook, no.
Handbook, you cannot do that? That's why? Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I would agree. You know, there is no way to, you know, get rid of worst case scenario or to have those issues completely resolved. But I do think that getting rid of those murky terms is a step in the right direction. So I do agree with Robert and Yvonne in saying that just removing those modifier, those specific unclear terms, either sustained or tangible, is a step in the direction of trying to avoid those murky situations where some of these bad things might happen.
Let me just make one comment. We're a hair away from losing quorum. So just FYI.
Don't move.
Nobody. I mean, not a single person. Yes.
Jill Shadone, University College. If you look at these criteria, it's rife with subjectivity. There's not a word in there that has a definite, absolute definition to everyone in this room. Every committee is different. You can have the same, you have two different committees look at the same promotion packet, and they're going to be two different decisions. I would guarantee it almost every time. I think we are, again, arguing over things that we cannot control. I move to send it back to the handbook committee to do the best they can with removing the subjective terms.
That supersedes the motion that's on the floor.
Exactly. So let's, is there any further discussion on sending it back to handbook committee? Let's have a vote. All those in favor of sending this back to handbook committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Was that an opposed? So what are the opposed? So two opposed?
Means 35 in favor.
Any abstentions? One abstention? All right. Moving on to handbook Senate approval.
Do we need a count for quorum or not?
We've got it.
35?
We lose one more person, we're out.
Okay.
Item E simply clears up language that's dueling between the charter and the handbook with regard to when the Senate can act on amendments to the handbook. This proposal allows the Senate to do that at any time. Right now, there's a conflict between the faculty handbook language, which says the Senate has to wait until the next academic year, which would mean that all the things that you've agreed to change wouldn't change for another year. This language allows us to act now so that we can make sure that everything's I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And the changes would go into effect with July 1. That's what the language is about.
All right, can I get a motion to approve this?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approval of this one, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thanks very much. So what we've got then is non-substantive changes to the handbook. Can I get a motion to approve those, please?
Second.
Any discussion over the non-substantive revisions to the handbook? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Now we've got the proposed complete draft of the 20th edition handbook, understanding that this will be changed. Can I get a motion on this? I think there's a set. Well, we've got a...
Mark and Dick.
Jen, have you got
this? Oh, I don't have it up. Hang on a sec. I lost it when I was getting four.
Okay, hang on just a second. We've got a specific motion for this that will take care of...
In the interim, if y'all have seen the movie Groundhog Day, you know what I'm looking forward to next year.
Okay. Basically, we want a motion to approve the revised handbooks with revisions after decisions on the May 15th Senate agenda items by the provost and a full review by the Senate chair, the handbook committee, and the faculty welfare chair.
Can I get a second on that, please? Okay. Any further discussion on that?
So what does that do with the one that got remanded back in?
Well, there were two that got removed, and so it takes those out.
Yeah. Anything removed by you comes out. Uh-huh. Anything the provo does not sign off on
comes out.
And then Margaret, Tucker, and I will review the whole document to make sure that it's all capiche, and then it will be complete.
That is the motion.
So that's basically what we just remanded the committee will be in the 21st edition.
Maybe.
If it gets approved. Any further discussion over this? All those in favor of the motion on the floor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Oh, well, there's one more piece of business. Stopper.
Is she a... I don't think she's...
Oh, good.
Yes, if you don't call for a quorum count, you still have quorum until someone asks. So stop counting.
Okay, so we've got two more items. Budget Committee, Charter Revision Draft. This is the second reading for this. This came before Senate last time. This is the second reading for it to be able to go into the charter. So can I get a motion on the floor to approve this?
Second.
I'm not a voting member. Keep your pistols.
Any discussion on this item? Thank you very much, Mac.
Thanks, Mac.
All right, hearing no discussion, all those in favor of approval, second and final reading, the Budget Committee Charter Revision, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. One more item. Resolution on the president's salary, which is a concurrence with SGA resolution, is requested. This one was not endorsed by the SEC. We do have Mark here to speak about this.
Not going to take a lot of your time. We've discussed extensively today that there's a severe limitation of resources. This would be a great way, I think, for the president, who has demonstrated his commitment to this university admirably. I don't think he's a flight risk. It'd be a great way for him to demonstrate some solidarity with faculty and students who are going to be dealing with a 4% tuition increase. So I urge you to approve.
4.8%, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, 4.8%, yeah, that's right. The Vice President for Student Affairs made it 4% in a recent meeting.
Okay. Do you have a motion? Okay, so we have a motion. Can we get a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Okay, all those in favor of Senate concurrence with the SGA resolution on the president's salary, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, let me get a count of hands.
One, two, three.
Six. Any abstentions?
One abstention.
Okay, is there any further business? All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate all your hard work and sticking it out today.